Tomorrow's World Magazine, September-October 2024. The Leaders We Deserve by Jonathan McNair. Read by Dylan King. Throughout most of history, kings, queens, pharaohs, and dictators have ruled the earth. Most citizens of the world have had no say over the laws of the land or who made and enforced them. Average citizens were taxed on their work, conscripted into service, and made subject in every way to the rulers of the land. That is, until the rise of modern democracy. Today, people in so many countries around the world get to choose their own leaders. But how well are we choosing? Are our leaders building a just, equitable, and God-fearing society? Furthermore, what do our choices of leaders tell us about ourselves? Israel's choice. The story of King Saul provides an intriguing lesson. We read that Israel suffered under the leadership of Samuel's sons. Now it came to pass, when Samuel was old, that he made his sons judges over Israel. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside, after dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. That's 1 Samuel 8, verses 1 and 3. These men took advantage of their position and exploited the people. But instead of going to God for relief, the Israelites demanded a human-centered solution to the problem, saying to Samuel, "Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." Verse 5. When Samuel prayed to God for the answer to this dilemma, God responded, "Heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." 1 Samuel 8, verse 7. Samuel had been serving for many years as a representative of God. When people wished to know God's will, they would come to Samuel or another true prophet, but that arrangement did not satisfy the people. They wanted to follow the custom of the nations around them. They wanted a human ruler who could visibly lead them into battle, be their chief judge, and establish laws as he saw fit. That was the kind of leader they thought would save the day. Inspired by God, Samuel warned them of the consequences of their choice, saying that they would cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. Verse 18. And the Israelites got the leader they deserved. The story of Saul's selection has some interesting twists and turns. Saul was everything that looked good in a king. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, a mighty man of power, and he had a choice and handsome son whose name was Saul. There was not a more handsome person than he among the children of Israel. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. 1 Samuel 9, verses 1 and 2. Saul had the right pedigree. His father was a powerful leader, and he was big and good-looking, with the outward traits we tend to desire in those who lead us. Yes, God orchestrated Saul's ascension to the throne, but he was giving the people what he knew they wanted. Note what God inspired Samuel to say at Saul's coronation. "Now, therefore, here is the king whom you have chosen and whom you have desired. And take note, the Eternal has set a king over you." 1 Samuel 12, verse 13. So what happened when God gave them what they wanted? As the story unfolds, the Israelites learn that appearances can be deceiving. Instead of being courageous, Saul shrank in fear before the giant Goliath. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. That's in 1 Samuel 17, verse 11. It wasn't only the rank-and-file soldiers who were fearful of the giant. Saul, their king, the biggest and most impressive specimen of a man in the land, was terrified, and instead of acting as champion and hero, he was quite willing to allow an inexperienced young man, who wasn't even in the army, to step into his shoes, or rather his uniform. Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail, 1 Samuel 17, verse 38. Of course, we read that David rejected Saul's armor and relied upon God to protect and strengthen him, and God gave him victory over Goliath. As Saul revealed his true colors, the citizens of Israel came to see that their new monarch lacked more than just courage. They had expected that this man, whom had the look of a king, would judge them wisely. They had said to Samuel, "Look, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." 1 Samuel 8, verse 5. But the king they received showed his foolishness. As they prepared to battle the Philistines, Samuel told Saul to wait for him to make an offering to God to seek his blessing, but Saul impatiently ignored Samuel's instruction and led the offering himself. Samuel was outraged at his folly, saying, "What have you done?" This was Saul's response. 1 Samuel 13, verses 11 through 13 reads, "When I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, 'The Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Eternal.' Therefore I felt compelled, and offered a burnt offering." And Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Eternal your God, which he commanded you." Just one chapter later, we see Saul acting foolishly again, instructing the army to fast during a day of battle in a misguided attempt to show his determination to vanquish Israel's enemies. We read that the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had placed the people under oath, saying, "Cursed is the man who eats any food until evening, before I have taken vengeance on my enemies." So none of the people tasted food. 1 Samuel 14, verse 24. The day became a fiasco, with Saul's son Jonathan unknowingly breaking his father's command and dipping into a honeycomb he found. Jonathan was incredulous when he later learned of his father's ridiculous decree that denied the men food as they battled the Philistines, and the day ended in chaos. The people rushed on the spoil and took sheep, oxen, and calves and slaughtered them on the ground, and the people ate them with the blood. 1 Samuel 14, verse 32. Saul's irrational decisions brought bad results at every turn. The wise king the Israelites had anticipated was becoming a menace to his people. What they deserved. Instead of the strength his people expected, Saul showed cowardice. Instead of wisdom, he showed foolishness. Instead of mercy and benevolence, he revealed a streak of jealousy and vengefulness. In essence, the Israelites got the king they deserved. They learned the hard way that humans don't have the ability to truly see the heart of another person, and that we can be swayed by appearances. After Saul's demise, God established David as king. By appearance, David was not the man for the job, but God told Samuel that the Eternal does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Eternal looks at the heart. 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. Though David's own family could not see it, God saw that David was a man after his own heart. Despite his flaws, centuries later, this contrast between Saul and David was discussed in the book of Acts. We read, "And afterward they asked for a king, so God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. And when he had removed him, he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. Acts chapter 13, verses 21 and 22. A ruler the Israelites deserved, who had only the appearance of a good and godly leader, utterly failed, while a truly good and godly man, though lacking many of the superficial traits that seem to designate a leader, became the greatest human king of Israel's history. What is the lesson for us? What we deserve. With the rise of modern democracy, we have labored under the delusion that we can select the best leaders for ourselves. We look for people who appeal to our image of what leaders should be. Do they have winning personalities? Do they seem like attractive people to follow? Do they speak to the issues that are important to us personally? Will they stand for our values? Citizens of democratic countries vote for candidates who seem to have the most winning characteristics, but most people know, deep in their hearts, that each choice is a hopeful compromise with their conscience. They have a sneaking suspicion that they can't really trust their leaders. Consider a recent poll of American citizens conducted by the Pew Research Center. Here's what its surveys found. Quote, last year, 16% said they trusted the government just about always or most of the time, which was among the lowest measures in nearly 7 decades of polling. End quote. From Public Trust in Government, 1958 to 2024, Pew Research Center, June 24, 2024. Time and again, we tell ourselves, this time will be different. This election will be different. Yet, just as ancient Israel learned, what we see in our leaders to be is usually a mirage, our own wishful thinking. Where does that leave us? In many ways, and for many people, life in our modern world, particularly in the Western world, is no doubt an improvement over the life of the average man or woman throughout most of history. But while some ascribe that improvement to man's wisdom and prowess, Bible students know that the real reason for the prosperity of the United States and the British descended nations is found in the promise God made to Abraham many, many years ago. That promise granted wealth and prosperity unmatched in human history. To learn more, read our free booklet, The United States and Great Britain in Prophecy. These nations inherited a framework of largely biblical values, and despite ongoing rebellion against those values, they continue to benefit those who live by them. Sadly, instead of drawing closer to the God who has blessed us and beseeching Him to guide our nations and leaders as they adhere to His ways, we as a people have turned our backs on Him. Scripture tells us of God's mind toward our nations. My people would not heed my voice, and Israel would have none of me. So I gave them over to their own stubborn heart, to walk in their own counsels. Oh, that my people would listen to me, that Israel would walk in my ways. I would soon subdue their enemies and turn my hand against their adversaries. Psalm 81, verses 11 through 14. People today spend a tremendous amount of time promoting one political leader or another, arguing over candidates' abilities to bring solutions to our troubled lands. We watch politicians proclaim how much good they will do for our country, how much better they are than their opponent. We watch them criticize and ridicule each other, and in a vain hope for something better, we try to turn a blind eye to the ways in which they plainly do not reflect goodness, truth, and wisdom. We hope that the decisions they make in office will somehow turn out to be in harmony with godly values, even if their character is not. And we see fellow citizens passionately divided over which candidate is best, just as we see deepening divides over values, class, culture, and socioeconomic status. Yet we naively think that we can determine what is best for our nation. Which political leader will bring the best results? But does anyone ask, what is God's opinion? We can read of God's mind toward our foolishness. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Eternal and against His anointed, saying, "Let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us." He who sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall hold them in derision, and He shall speak to them in His wrath and distress them in His deep displeasure. Psalm 2, verses 2 through 5. What we need. The time will soon come when this world will have a ruler who will not be of its choosing, and he will finally bring the solutions to mankind's problems. He will be the one who chose ancient Israel's king after his own heart. We read, "There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Eternal shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Eternal. His delight is in the fear of the Eternal, and he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and faithfulness the belt of his waist. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Eternal as the waters cover the sea. And in that day there shall be a root of Jesse who shall stand as a banner to the people, for the Gentiles shall seek him, and his resting place shall be glorious." Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 6 and verses 9 and 10. Appearances can be deceiving, so as King of Kings, Jesus Christ will judge not by outward appearances, but by hearts. He will lead in sincerity and truth, with love, mercy, and kindness. His rule will teach mankind to set aside the carnal mindset that leads to rejecting Him. He will rule in such a way that mankind will instead choose to obey and submit to Him. A familiar refrain. Ever since Adam and Eve, mankind has replayed the same story over and over again. The blessings God provides have been taken for granted, and we have stubbornly turned our backs on Him. In taking from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the first couple declared that they could go it alone without looking for God's guidance. As a result, mankind has suffered under countless human-conceived systems that seem better to us than God's way. Some of those humanly-conceived systems are even presented to us in the name of someone's mistaken idea of Christianity. In the United States, we are seeing the rise of a philosophy often called Christian nationalism that claims to apply Christian values to politics and government. Sadly, as you will see in this issue's article, Dangerous Christianity, on page 16, some of the most dangerous deceptions come to us with the false label of Christianity. But when we look back at the example of ancient Israel, we should be wary of those who would offer us a human king, or president, or prime minister as a satisfactory substitute for God and His perfect rule. As we have seen, the example of ancient Israel provides a timely illustration for us today. When the Israelites proclaimed that they wanted a human leader instead of God, He gave them a leader they deserved. Looking at the current state of electoral politics, can we deny that we echo their rebellious chorus today? End of article. May we suggest the world ahead? What will it be like? Catch a glimpse of a real future world under perfect leadership. Request this free printed booklet from the regional office nearest you or order it at tomorrowsworld.org. PDF, EPUB, and Kindle are also available, as well as an audio recording at your special request.